the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Welcome once again to your favorite CHL podcast. This is indeed Junior. I am the returning Jeff Merrick and in for the absent Sam Cosentino. I took my break last week. He takes his this week dealing with some matters. Our man Todd Warner from the CHL on Sportsnet. Todd, former Windsor Spitfire, former Kitchener Ranger, now analyst with the us on Sportsnet, covering off the CHL. Welcome to the podcast, my good friend.
Good to be here. Thank you.
A pleasure to have you aboard. Before we get to the action around the CHL, in our game tonight, by the way, Chris Knobloch is going to be joining us, head coach of the Erie Otters. When you look back on your career, Kitchener, Windsor, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I try not to look back that often.
You had a great junior career. Come on, I know you're all humble and shiz, but you had a really good junior career.
What's the thing that comes to mind? Friendships, my billets.
Yeah.
You know, mostly.
You still friends with guys you played with in junior?
Yeah, sure. Sure I am. I still talk to, you know, a half dozen guys regularly kind of thing, you know. I only played on two teams over 3.5 years kind of thing. So, yeah, that's the part that it doesn't change. Whether you're in junior or pro or, you know, that you know, aside from how many goals you scored or how far you made in the playoffs, it's the relationships, schoolmates, teachers,
you know, and you
billets,
were,
all those things.
You were in an interesting time in the OHL as far as the draft goes, because at that point when you got selected into the OHL, you had to go and make a speech.
I did.
In front of everybody. Like everybody did. And kids would dread it, I can recall. And yours was legendary, according to people that were there.
You know what? It's so funny. I dreaded it too. Don't worry.
Yeah.
But I put a lot of time into it. I wanted to thank all the people. Like I kind of came, I don't know if you remember, Jeffy, I came from nowhere. I played B hockey in my hometown of Blenheim until I was a major Bantam. I played a little bit of midget in junior C that year as a 14, 15-year-old. And then I went to Chatham to try out in junior B for the experience, not expecting to ever make it.
Yep.
So, you know, fast track, you know, 18 months later, here I am. You know, I'm one of the top-rated players. The last half of my junior B year, I went from, you know, a seventh rounder to the first of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to thank a lot of people, teachers, the guys in Chatham who gave me a chance to play. It was a deep, older team. We had seven guys get scholarships, half a dozen guys get drafted. And for me to even be on that team at a training camp was unusual. So I appreciated that chance. And the coaches of that team were friends with my father. They'd played senior hockey with my father back in the day. So they gave me an opportunity, got better, gave me a chance to play, and gave me the experience. And so I went at length in my speech, and I think they were, you know, if it had been the Oscars, they'd be giving me the, you know, get off, kid.
Okay,
on, they're playing, down,
playing
the music.
Playing the music, here comes
but,
the
But I thanked teachers. I thanked my minor hockey coaches. I thanked, you know, everybody.
How did that draft go that year? You were, third?
I was third, yeah. It was Pat Peek. Detroit Compere. Great, great player. Career shortened by bad heels, Achilles problems. But and then it was Jeff Bess.
Yeah, 12th
time. Yeah, Hamilton at the time, but. Both great players, great junior careers, great pro careers.
Did you know that you were going third? Like, did you know you were going to Windsor?
I had a feeling. It's a bit of you know the story. I think about Dave Draper was working for Hamilton. He didn't think it was the right place for me. Mm-hmm. He sort of did my family and me a favor after we sat down in my living room a few times, and he was on his way to Quebec at that point to be a development guy. And Brad Smith had been at my house, the coach of the Windsor Spitfires, a number of times, and they really wanted to get me. I think he and Dave sort of, you know, behind the scenes worked a deal where they let me slide to three, and I got to go to Windsor, which is basically my hometown. So it was a good setup all the way through for me.
Small barn in Windsor.
Yeah.
The old Windsor Arena. Legendary. Loud. Fans on top of you. What was that like?
I wish the kids could see games from there now. Like when I do the Spitfire games now, it's fun because they have this what's it called, flashback or segment they play on TV Kojiko.
It really is awesome.
And they
so much fun.
And they show some games from the
80s. Hey, look, it's Billy Bowler. Hey, Eddie Joe.
It's
cool.
It's chaos. Right, in that old ring. I can remember, I could tell a story. There was one game, a squirrel fell. A squirrel fell from the rafters right in the middle of the play. and they had to scoop it up. The Zamboni guy comes out with the shovel.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's clapping for him. He comes out, he scoops up the, and takes him off the ice. There used to be birds come in, you know, the fans in the end of the arena, and the birds would come in. And you'd be out there on the ice, and all of a sudden, there'd be a bird would, like, dive bomb you out there. And we got into a fight once with London, and Smitty was waving the white towel with Don Van Massenhoven, and I got hit with the white blue slush, and so I had blue all over my jersey as I left the ice. I saw a guy get hit with a full size battery.
What?
In the helmet.
Hang on, this is London, bro.
This is in a different game. But
oh, okay.
I'm going into
this
a face
is in
off.
Windsor?
I'm going into a face off with a guy named John Stoss.
Okay.
Who was whose twin brother was my teammate in Windsor. He was playing for Compure at the time. And a full-size battery comes out of the crowd, hits him right in the helmet, knocks him right out. Hit him in the helmet, falls down. We're like, holy cow, that just happened, you know? Poor guy. Anyway, yeah, it was a different time, obviously.
Yeah, it was a different era. It was exciting
to play in. Exciting for the home team, but difficult, I'd imagine, for a visiting team.
Now, one of my favorite stories you've ever told me is your rookie year and your first trip to North Bay. And you got to share this one. We're going to talk about the battalion here in a couple of seconds, but... playing against the Centennials, the first trip up to NB as a young Windsor Spitfire rookie, how'd it go?
Well, my first game was Thursday night at home in Windsor, and I can't recall who we played. I shouldn't remember this, but I do remember getting on the bus the next day. We were going to drive, 8 hours to North Bay. And so all the older guys on the team, they got this young rookie, and they're playing a prank on me. They say, Toddy, you got to keep your head up out there tonight because there's this guy in North Bay. His name's Casey Jones. He hunts the first rounder every year. So Ryan Merritt was the first round of the year before. He's telling me, he's like, yeah, he came right across the red line, clothesline me, beat the snot out of me in warm up. So I'm 15 years old, white knuckle ride, 8 hours up to North Bay. And I'm thinking, God, I should know who this guy is. And this is, before internet, and you didn't have,
you had to go to Hockey DB.
The league program was, wasn't out yet. And so, I can't sleep. I'm just thinking, oh my God, this guy's coming for me. So they let me go out first, skate around, do my victory lap. And so then as the guys start to filter out behind me, they're pointing in the corner. Casey Jones is the old Centennials mascot, and he's got a head about 5 feet wide. Yeah. So they were saying that to me on the bus, like, this guy's got the hugest head, Toddy. You won't believe how big this guy is. He's an overage. He's going to come and get you. Keep your head up. And so they're pointing to this mascot at their chuckle. So I was relieved after that. I'm looking for this guy. As soon as I step on the ice, he doesn't come. It's the mascot. So that was pretty funny. I
want to get to North Bay, the battalion, not the Centennials here in a couple of seconds. But one more thought on your old Windsor Spitfire squad. You may have had, with all due respect to, Ray Emery, who was pretty tough in junior as well, you may have had the toughest goaltender in the history of the OHL.
Well, when I played, you're talking about Greg Scott.
Yeah.
Yes. He was in Kitchener when I eventually played for him.
Yeah.
But in Windsor, one night, our tough guy was Tom Sullivan, tough as nails guy from Hamilton, great guy. And he clipped Travis. He was playing for Niagara Falls at the time.
That's right.
And said something to each other, and so our tough guy goes back at Scott or in the goal. None of the Niagara guys do anything about it. Like, it's just our tough guy, Tom Sullivan, and Greg Scott, their goalie, they square off. So, normally somebody's coming to the goalie's rescue.
Yeah.
Greg's 6'4", 210 pounds. He loves to fight. He's a great dude, too.
Yeah,
I got to play with him later. And they go toe-to-toe, one of the best fights I ever saw in junior hockey. The goaltender and our tough guy, both guys are leaking.
You guys showed this on TV Kojiko on a Windsor game. So now it lives on YouTube, so you guys can find out exactly what Todd is talking about, Tom Sullivan against Greg Scott.
Yeah, Scotter was, if he'd have been a winger, he'd have been a 300-minute guy. He was tough.
Oh, and he loved to do it too, right?
He did.
Now, where did you play with him afterwards?
So he got traded to Kitchener right before I got there, a year later, I guess. And he and C.J. Denemy were our goalies with the Rangers when Joe McDonough was our coach. So, yeah, great, great guy.
Because he was picked up by the Red Wings organization?
He and C.J. both were Red Wing draft picks. And so I played with both those guys in Kitchener. Good guys. And Scotter, we would laugh about that fight because this is our tough guy.
Tom Sullivan was raw.
Legit. Oh, yeah.
You and I have talked about the Ryan Vanderbush fight, which is my favorite fight of all time. And you were ringside for that one. Tom Sullivan.
But this is a goalie.
And he more than did all right against Tom.
He beat our tough guy up. I hate to say it, Sully, but that's what happened.
All right, let's get to North Bay, the battalion, not so much as Centennials. Never count out a Stan Butler squad. You know what? You really never can. And they're getting great goaltending from Jake Smith. And the blue line is big and is strong. And they're getting key goals. Players like Nick Pauly, once again, distinguishing himself. Oshawa wins last night. That series now deadlocked at twos. It is the best two out of three. Surprised?
I shouldn't be. I picked Oshawa, as you remember, to be the team to represent the OHL Memorial Cup. I shouldn't be surprised. Stan Butler finds ways to get his teams to buy into this defensive checking system. I'm sure it's frustrating for the Oshawa Generals to
get it to the Guelph Storm last year.
All this firepower, and now they're getting, they're mucking it out. They play structured. They play defensive. Their best players defend well. Their defense with McIver and Wood, Brendan Miller, are 200-foot guys that make it hard on offensive players to produce, and they're getting great goaltending. So, yeah, for me, with Oshawa, their top-end guys have been pretty good. They're still scoring. I want to see more from guys like Hunter Smith and Mistilee, some of their depth players, and that's what DJ Smith was preaching all year. If we're going to win, it's because of our depth, because of our size. And even Van de Sample, I know he's a rookie, but you want to see more offensively from these guys, and that's a credit to what North Bay's doing to him. They're making it hard on him to score regularly.
Mm-hmm. Stephen DeRoche has been good on that blue line for
Oshawa. Yeah, he had a good game the other night. That's a good sign. But, the battle in the net between Appleby, who was the best goaltender in the regular season, and Smith has been won by Smith. And as the series go on, they find ways to shut down the high-end players. That's what North Bay's always done. That's what Stan Butler teams are known for. And I sense a bit of frustration in Oshawa.
Guelph felt it last year, and yep. I've given up counting out Stan Butler teams. Like, I'd say, okay, it's the best two out of three. You'd think the depth of the Oshawa Generals, the size, the constant pounding, the big play of Ken Appleby would eventually beat down North Bay. But you look at, and then getting like clutch goals from players like Ryan Kujawinski, who doesn't have to be the star, but just has to be part of a team, maybe now for the first time in his OHL career. Like, I don't know. I just refuse to count out North Bay. I just can't.
They get it by committee. Like, you look at the scoring leaders. There's never a group of North Bay guys generally that are at the top of the list. They get scoring guy committee. He rolls his lines. They play, they back up. They defend well. They're not overly aggressive. They play in their zones. They don't run around a lot. So they conserve their energy for the critical moments. And, Kujawinski, Mutri, six goals each. They've been good contributors. They haven't needed to do more like they did on their other teams. Less is more in a lot of respects on a Stan Butler team. So, I can tell when I watch North Bay play that it would be frustrating to play against them. I know what that's like. I've seen teams, and in my era, that's how a lot of teams played. Mm-hmm. The game's kind of gone away from that a little bit, but not when Stan Butler's coaching. So, it's going to be tough for anybody to beat them. I think I sense it when I watch the press conference, too, from DJ Smith.
Right. I don't want to play like this.
He wants to get his players moving and get forechecking and get after people. And North Bay, they like it. They don't mind to play that way. They like the physical nature.
How do you get the kids to buy into that, though? Because that can't be fun.
It works.
I mean, it's fun.
Proof's in the pudding. Like, Stan's done it every year. Yeah. So just pop in the video at training camp and say, this is what we did and why we did well.
Reminded of all those Montreal Canadiens players who used to always say, I hated Scotty Bowman every day other than the day they gave us our rings.
That's right. Well,
it's like, it works.
I get the sense, though, with Stan, he's pretty cut and dry, I don't know him personally real well. Is that a coaching?
I know Stan going back years, and I love him.
And it's just, this is how we're going to do it. Either you fall in line or you won't play as much. And it's as simple as that. And he uses his depth players a lot. But he's got offensive players who are also excellent defensively, like a Nick Paul, who was a shutdown guy at World Junior. So lots to like about the way it's not as entertaining. We've been lucky. We're covering an Erie series against the Sioux, and it's been back and forth and high entertainment.
And
lots of goals, lots of hits, lots of everything. This is much more structured hockey from both teams, but especially North Bay.
Let's get on that Erie Sioux St. Marie series as well. I think everyone thought that Erie was going to be super competitive in this series. You have Connor McDavid and Alex DeBrincat and Dylan Strome, and go right down the list. It's some high-end talent there. I don't know that people thought we'd be looking at Game 5, going back to the Sioux, with Erie up 3-1.
No, definitely not. I saw this going maybe the distance in the Sioux's favor. I think we all did, thought the Sioux was the team to beat.
I think it can still go the distance. I'm not writing the Sioux off.
For sure. And again, we go back to Game 3. We talked about this. The Sioux, they outchance more possession time, in zone time, all the things that you need to have success. And the Erie gets their turnover, they get their odd man rush, and it's in the back of the net. So there's things to build on there. We saw the top line of the Sioux have a breakout game in game four in a loss, but they played much better. Tulchinski, McCann, Bunting, much better. They need them to be better. But it's a big hill to climb now for the Sioux. Two games at home, sure, but 3-1, they have to, you know, you have to build on the positive front. For Sheldon Keefe, and we talked about this before going into game four, they've done a lot of good things. It could easily be 3-1 the Sioux, quite honestly.
Sure. Yep.
And so you just have to keep, you know, reinforcing all the positive things they did in terms of the chances, the opportunities, all the possession time. They get D'Angelo back. He made a difference. If Nurse can continue to play those kind of minutes and be hard on McDavid, I think it can wear on him at some point. Well, I haven't seen it yet.
And well, tonight Keefe gets the matchups
right.
He wants.
So he and so we're going to talk to Chris Knobloch, and we know he's been trying to avoid it as much as he could. But yeah, I it's as close a 3-1 series as I've maybe seen in quite some time. So there's reason for optimism there for the Greyhounds, but it's a big task at this point.
What do you make of that matchup? And we've focused a lot on this in games 3 and 4, and tonight we'll have game 5. This one in the Sioux. Of the matchup between future Oilers Darnell Nurse and Connor McDavid. I mean, on the one hand, you almost say to yourself, well, good luck.
Yeah.
It's such a tough assignment. But then you look at the athleticism of someone like Darnell Nurse and how strong he is. You think to yourself, maybe he's got a shot.
You know, I'll say it again. As much as McDavid's numbers don't maybe show it, Darnell Nurse has done a pretty good job 5-on-5. He's been hard. And you saw McDavid red-faced. He looked tired.
He was tired.
And
he had
4 assists. Yeah, they won the game. And he had to dig in at the end to get the nice play to bring it for the goal. But, you know, Darnell Nurse has been hard on him. And he's a big, strong kid. He can skate. He's one of the few defensemen in the league that can maybe keep up with McDavid, take back ice, limit what he does in the middle of the ice coming at you with speed. The numbers, again, for McDavid in this series wouldn't suggest he's done a very good job, but it's been largely on the power play shorthand. He's had an empty netter or two, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he's done a pretty good job and playing a lot of minutes too, Nurse. And he's been up ice. We've seen him in front of the net on the power play.
Yeah.
So he's a horse. I'm impressed with what I've seen from him, but it is a big job for anybody in the world.
Yeah.
To shut this guy down.
You know, how do you do it? You keep hearing out there every game, gap up, boys. I mean, it's a gap control game. How do you control gap on Connor McDavid, who varies his speeds the way that he does, unlike anybody else we've ever seen?
Well, that's just it. And we talked about this where he, you know, he'll gain speed and then he'll sort of hesitate.
Back off.
Control his skating.
Slow down.
Control his skating. And then 3 quick strides and he's up to top speed again. And that's hard. You know, that's the kind of thing that usually takes gym time and plyomet, all those things that you get when you get your man strength. He seems to have that already. And that's a credit to his training. Gary Roberts, I guess, would be the guy to thank for that. But speed, you know, so then when you're trying to gap up on a guy like that and he's changing paces of his skating, that's difficult. That's really hard to do. And so most of the guys, as we've seen all year with the highlights goals he's scored, they're backing up. And if he's taking a guy one-on-one at the top of the circles, he's going to make you look bad with that kind of speed. So,
So
I thought Nurse has done fine. He's been hard on him in zone. He's really good, as you know, off the cycle and creating chances from behind the net. I think he's done a pretty good job that way, but he's just taken his game to a level where I'm not sure anybody is going to keep him off a score sheet any night.
Anyone from the Sioux, and my answer would be Nick Ritchie, anyone from the Sioux really jump out at you so far in this series?
Well, Nurse, you know, you think of the chance he had midway through the third the other night. I can't remember who passed it to him, but he had a chance left side of the net and good save. It goes the other way and they get the goal. Like, you know, he's been in a shutdown role, as involved as any of the forwards, really, and opportunities up front. He blew one off the crossbar there from distance during that same game. And so, yeah, and Richie's goals, I mean, you can't discount that. The top line, if they can, you know, contribute again tonight. Tulchinski, I think, has played pretty well. He's just had nothing to really show for it in the series, it seems. He's got the puck a lot. He's made some good plays. You know, Jared McCann, I think he's got 4 goals. I mean, there's a guy you hope to contribute more. He's got such a great shot, puts a lot of pucks on the net. So you'd like to see that line continue to go if they can. And Richie can stay hot. Nurse gets the favorable matchup at home. There's reason to think they can get back in it.
Yeah, I don't think Sue's out of this by a long shot. Game 5 tonight, you can watch on Sportsnet 360. It is the Greyhounds and the Erie Otters. Let's hustle out west, and we'll get to some Q action as well as, the President's Cup is set.
Yes, it is.
And it was 2 sweeps. But meanwhile, Brandon and Calgary, anything surprising you about this one?
Not really. A couple blowouts.
Yeah, you know,
which
that's
a little
what's
surprising.
That's when you consider how Calgary can play.
Yeah,
I thought this one would be a little more, well, not a little, a lot more competitive than it is.
Yeah, and there's been some injuries in Calgary. You know, the goaltending
Vertanen suspension doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help. Yeah, that's true. The goaltending in Calgary with the couple lopsided wins. I'm not sure who gets the net. Is it Burke's net now? I'm not sure. That's a debate. You know, but we've seen Brandon how many times this year, and their depth, you know, Pilon seems to be healthy. There's a lot of things to like about this team. It was one of my favorite teams to cover during the year because they can score and they defend well, and they're getting the goaltending now from Paperny consistently through the playoffs, the best in the league. So that's scary for any team, especially when we get the Memorial Cup, if you get goaltending like that. Healthy blue line, Provorov's continues to be steady and strong, producing up front. The Quenneville brothers have been solid. Harluck's been good. Lots to like about Brandon.
Nolan Patrick.
Nolan Patrick Dodd. This kid's got such a bright
future.
Not
available for a couple of years in the draft, but pencil him in for the first overall pick.
Plays like a 20-year-old. You know, and when we covered him a few weeks ago, winning faceoffs, you know, playing as the forward when they're down 5-on-3, like how many 16-year-olds come into a good team and get that vote of confidence?
How many 16-year-olds come in and score 30 goals in the Western Hockey League?
Difficult, really difficult. This kid's off the charts, a high hockey IQ, but already, you know, determined in the defensive zone, already reliable enough that Kelly McCrimmon, a veteran coach, is going to him for faceoff wins and going for block shots and all the things that he's going to need to get to the next level. He's already doing
and protecting leads. I mean, he's taking the faceoff in the defensive zone, protecting a one goal lead.
Yeah, that speaks volumes. I mean, really,
right?
How many kids are doing that? I mean, you've covered junior hockey for so long. I can't think off the top of my head. Even Connor McDavid, he wasn't the guy, you know, as a 16-year-old.
Well, and it's an elite level team too. So
right.
It's hard enough to make it. Yeah, it's not as if Kelly McCrimmon doesn't have options.
Hard enough to make it. He's come in 30 goals. And, you know, and the defensive conscience of the forward group, which is just says so much. I love this kid. I think he's, as you said, he's going to be pencil him in right now. He's going to be the top guy.
Kelowna and Portland all tied up at twos. The Winterhawks again throwing a scare into Bruce Hamilton's squad.
Yeah, this for me is whether, you know, Kelowna can shut down the Stars in Portland. Patan and Bjorkstrand, clearly Kelowna has more depth, in my opinion, up front, more depth on the blue line. And whether they can keep Bjorkstrand and Patan off the score sheet with some consistency is how this series is going to settle out. And exercising the demons of the playoffs past is another thing,
100%.
Too. Like, and so it's in the back of their head.
How much does that weigh on you psychologically as a junior hockey player? Oh, Portland again. Oh, here we go. Western Conference. Playing off against the Portland Winterhawks one more time.
It's fresh with this group. I mean, you go back 3 years, I guess. It's not. There'd be a couple guys left from the Kelowna roster at that time. But, you know, it's from a standpoint of their team as a group. This is always in the back of their mind. So Portland, you know, feels that going in. They know the track record from the past, so they know that we can beat this team. They can upset Kelowna, and the pressure has always been on Kelowna, and we've talked about this year. It feels like it's heavy a little bit there, and they expect to do well. So Portland comes in. They've done it in the past. They're the underdog, and so it's got to be in the back of the mind of these Kelowna players, management for sure, whether they can keep it out of the dressing room is another thing.
Well, you know Danny Lambert quite well. I mean, you have a relationship and a background with the Kelowna head coach. How do you think he handles something like this?
Well, we've talked about this before. I played with Danny in Germany. He was our captain. I played with him for 2 years, and he was a great captain. I played 15 professional teams. I had so many captains, I can't keep track of them, but he was one of the best, and I mean that. And he was good about managing the relationship between the coach, who was a German guy. He was great about accommodating the young German players and helping them fit into a team that had, you know, a dozen imports, mostly from Canada. Mm. So finding ways for those kids to contribute and get into the mix as far as our team goes. I think he's a tremendous captain. Having said that, I know there's lots of pressure on this guy to deliver. And He's been around this team as an assistant for a lot of years. He's done a great job. We talked about the defenseman that Kelowna's spit out over the years, and he's a big reason for that.
Yeah.
But I get the sense when I talk to him, this is more than he's seen. And he's ready to challenge this team, and he knows how to do it. But whether he can get them to do it in the end remains to be seen. And this is a big hurdle. I think if they get through this, we may see this team in the finals of the Mem Cup, because this is a huge lift. If they get by Portland,
yeah,
exercise the demons, there'll be a little bit of confidence gained from that, I'm sure, throughout the lineup. Coaches, man, everybody.
Yeah, still another hurdle.
If
Brandon
for,
gets by Calgary, that's a big one.
For sure. But this is bigger, I think, right now for them. This is a team that's gave them fits and found ways to beat them, and it's in their head, and they get through that, and I think you're going to like this Kelowna team.
A couple of sweeps in the Quebec League, which now automatically by beating Rimouski and by virtue of Quebec beating Moncton, there are your two teams that will be from Quebec in the MasterCard Memorial Cup at the end of May. Quebec, of course, hosting, and Rimouski is through now. The question now becomes who's going in through the front door and who's going in through the back door of the President's Cup. We'll decide that. Any surprises, whether it's Rimouski beating Val-d'Or or Quebec beating Moncton, or are you just shocked that both of them were sweeps? I'm a little surprised at Quebec-Moncton. I thought Moncton would have more of a fight, but it seems as if, when Quebec heated up and Kurt Echegaray was fantastic, Adam Ernie was fantastic as well, it seemed as if Moncton didn't have an answer. But your thoughts on the Q semifinals?
You think back to last round, quarterfinals. Moncton has to go 7 games to beat Halifax. Quebec, they sweep Charlottetown 4-0. So maybe it's, a byproduct two ways where Quebec's finding their game. They're getting their game together. We're seeing contribution. Adam Ernie, we're seeing Duclair play much better. They seem to be rounding into form at the right time. But on the other side, they win 4-0. And so they get time to rest. And that's huge in any playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Moncton may be overtaxed in the Halifax series.
Halifax gave them everything they
did.
wanted.
And
so that was
a great series.
The pace of that series was fantastic.
Yeah. And we've seen Halifax and how they can skate. And Moncton played them tooth and nail, overtime games. There's a lot of reasons why they would be run down from that series. And so they get Quebec, whose game looks sharp and ready to host. And, 4-0. So that's how it happens.
So two teams are in for the MasterCard Memorial Cup. There is the host Quebec Ramparts, of course, and Rimouski, the Oceanic, will be there in Quebec City at the end of May. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk to Erie Otters head coach Chris Knobloch. It is game 5 tonight between Erie and the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds on Sportsnet 360. We'll talk to the head coach in moments.
I'm Wayne Simmons. I play for the Philadelphia Flyers, and I played for Owen Sound and Sault Ste. Marie of the OHL.
Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Todd Warner filling in for Sam Cosentino. Joined now by the head coach, who's up 3-1 over the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, head coach of the Erie Otters, Chris Knobloch. Chris, how are you today, sir? Thanks for doing this.
Oh, good. Thanks for having me.
First of all, heading into a game 5, did you think that you'd be up 3-1 at this point? A surprise? And if so, I'm guessing it's a pleasant one.
Yeah, it is a pleasant surprise. We didn't know what the series was going to hold, but we felt that we are a good team and we can win some hockey games. But going in, there's no expectation that we'd be up in this situation right now.
Chris, Todd Warner here. Talk about the Darnell Nurse, Connor McDavid matchup and whether you're trying to avoid that. It seems like you don't have to with what he's been able to do against him, but is that a matchup you'd like to avoid if you could?
Well, Darnell is their number one defenseman, and as an opposition coach, you'd like to have your best player away from their number one defenseman, but it's not a situation that we're trying to hide from, it's pretty tough to get it away. They've just been able to get that matchup most of the time, but as well as Connor's been playing, it hasn't been an issue. It hasn't been able to slow him down, so we'll be just doing what we've been, our standard plan.
From our little perch watching in the studio, watching Connor McDavid, often we'll shake our heads and say, well, I've never seen that before.
Every time.
No kidding. As a head coach, though, and watching Connor day in, day out, in practice, in game, do you still have those moments like, wow, this kid is even more special than I thought?
Yeah, absolutely I do. It's, I've had the pleasure of coaching him for 2.5 years, and just when you figure you've got to figure it out and seen everything, he continues to surprise. So it's just been the last couple months that I've accepted that I shouldn't be surprised because of it. Just his skill is just limitless. Like he just he can just pull off some things that you just didn't think was possible.
Chris, talk about Alex DeBrincat. We've covered your team now, what, half a dozen times or more?
Yep.
And every time we see him play on the edge, get in people's faces, you know, kind of play this feisty sort of game, he always comes through and seems to score on those particular nights. Do you want him playing like that? Is that something you ask of him as a young player, to be that kind of, you know, feisty forward? It seems to pay off with goals when he does.
Yeah, he is, and I don't think as a coach I have much option to right. tell him not to play like that, because it's just in him. But it is what makes him effective. He's only about 150 pounds, as he will compete with anybody. And, you know, that's the reason why he had the year that he did. Coming in here as a free agent to our team, and you know, we expected big things out of him, but you know what he did was really exceptional, and that's because of his competitiveness. Mm-hmm.
51 goals, 104 points for Alex DeBrincat. We had Sherry Bassett on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I'll ask you the same question about Alex DeBrincat that I asked the GM and owner. Could you see him as a full-time center in the OHL, Chris?
Yeah, I think he can. He's he moves the puck really well. Those little guys, a lot of people will say, you know, they can't handle the grind and get worn down. But also those little guys, it's hard to hit them. And I know I coached against Ryan Nugent-Hopkins when he was in the Western League, and our goal was to be physical on him and wear him down. But you know, those smart, shifty players, you know, it's easier said than done.
Would your worry be with him playing center, playing in your own end, and whether he can manage, you know, the fitness level to battle down low with bigger players in the league and then still contribute offensively?
Well, they always do. It's not a traditional centerman spot, but, you know, left winger, whoever's the first guy into the zone typically takes that role as support forward, or what is traditionally known as the center spot. And every team pretty much does it. The centerman just tends to be that guy who competes more. Mm-hmm. But Alex has done that role most nights, and throughout the year when we had some injuries, in particular when Connor McDavid was hurt for 6 weeks and gone to the World Junior for up to 7 weeks, we relied on him to be a centerman. And when he was our centerman, he handled those responsibilities well.
Talk about your power play. We watched the other night, and we noticed that early in the game, at least, you had five forwards, and it was Baptiste's first goal, the seam pass from McDavid. Is that something we'll see again tonight?
No. We typically go with four forwards and a defenseman, but at that time, we were missing our top three defensemen. Our top guy, McDermott, is serving an 8-game suspension. He wasn't available. Our Travis Dermott was in the box for a penalty, and so was our number three defenseman, Darren Radish. So we're running out of options.
Right.
So we had Remy Elie as our fifth forward, but that's something we tend to not do.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Travis Dermott a second ago, Chris, because I've maintained, going back to when we first found out who was going to be the top prospects, this guy may be the most underrated defenseman, not just in the OHL, but the entire CHL. Agree or disagree?
I agree, and I know a lot of coaches tend to get, you know, favor their players, but I just think, you know, he's been undervalued, and what he possesses, what he gives our team is... it's a lot, and we've seen it even more with our suspension to Curtis McDermott, that his responsibilities have just gone through the roof. He's been playing 30 minutes. The other night he played 31 for us.
Really?
He's able to just, he enjoys that competition. He loves the challenge, and he does have some pretty good offensive skills.
Chris, you'll remember I'm friends with Jay McKee, and I talked to Jay a little bit throughout the year when we've been covering your team, and he calls him the ankle breaker. I love that. That's like the crossover in basketball. This guy's got slick moves and makes good passes, and we've seen his stock rise, so you got a good one there.
Yes, that is a good one, and the players actually were the ones who gave him that, and yeah, just when guys are going hard, which forwards do, they want to, coaches are always telling forwards to go as hard as they can on the defenseman to take away that time, but he's so agile, and he can spin off whether it's the left or the right, and yeah. It just makes embarrasses some forwards.
Yeah, here's something I've always wanted to ask you, Chris. How do you coach Connor McDavid when you have a player like that with that skill set who can think and play at that level? What's your job in that process?
It's a coach's dream. You've got an exceptional young man who's very mature at now 18 years old with exceptional skill. And when you get those players who have that exceptional skill, sometimes there's some arrogance and entitlement. But with Connor, there isn't. He wants to win, and he wants to play well all the time. And as a coach, you give him some guidance. You give him advice of what the other team's trying to do to shut him down. But he's got to figure it out. So my responsibilities are a little bit smaller than coaching the rest of the team.
When you have a season like the Erie Otters just did and you're heading into trade deadline, how much conversation would you have had with Sherry Basson, not just at deadline, but throughout the year, saying, hey, we need a player like Nick Baptiste. Hey, we could use a Remy Elie. Hey, Jake Marchman will look good on our squad. How much feedback or how much input would you have when it comes to trades?
We talk all the time. Through the summer, think about what your team needs, because you lose a lot of, like every good team does, a lot of your players move on to go pro or they're overagers. But throughout the season, the same thing happens of, well, our team needs this. And where Sherry and I are talking a lot about what our needs are and our power play. Our first need was a right-handed shot for our power play. And Nick Baptiste was that first guy that we went and got because we wanted that sniper on the right side. Mm-hmm. We talked about what we need for defense. But and then Remy Elie and Jake Marchment are two guys that we wanted. So we do a lot of talking.
And on that, we'll let you go. Chris, thanks so much for stopping by today. Much appreciated. Congratulations on the success so far. Good luck tonight in Game 5, and we'll catch up down the road. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck, Chris.
There he is, head coach of the Erie Otters, Chris Knobloch. Tonight on Sportsnet 360, it is Game 5 as Chris Knobloch hopes that he will be shaking the hand of Sheldon Keefe at center ice. Erie up 3-1 on this series, Game 5 tonight on Sportsnet 360. Take a quick break. When we come back, talk about a couple of coaching firings around the CHL, Kitchener and Charlottetown, to be specific. We're back in a moment.
I'm Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Sarnia Sting in the OHL.
Welcome back to the program. This is Junior. I'm Jeff Merrick alongside Todd Warner, who's in for Sam Cosentino on today's podcast. On the broadcast, it'll be RJ Broadhead and Louis DeBrusque will step in for Sam and Sault Ste. Marie. In studio, myself alongside Todd Warner and Troy Smith, who I almost said is head coach of the Kitchener Rangers, but as of yesterday is now ex-coach. Of the Kitchener Rangers. This one caught me by surprise. When you look at, everything, not just in sports, but in life, is managing your expectations. And if you're a head coach and the general manager trades two of your top players, Peterson and Bailey, yeah. I'm not so sure the expectation is to make the playoffs anymore. And sure, Jake Patterson was fantastic, but the Kitchener Rangers made the playoffs, took London 6 games.
Yes,
and
it's an achievement in itself.
An achievement in itself, without your top two guys that got shuffled away. I'm a little surprised he didn't get his contract renewed. Todd, you too?
I am too. I feel bad for Troy. We've got to know him really good here covering games, and I think it came as a bit of a shock to him too. And we maybe get to that a little bit tonight, but it's tough. We've seen it at the highest levels. It's a cutthroat business in some ways. Because of that, you get, your team is what it is. And in my estimation, that team overachieved the last third of the year.
Into
the
playoffs. Surprised they made, when they made those trades, I said, it's going to be tough for Smitty to get this team in.
Yeah, and he did a nice job. You know, and we've seen how prepared he is when we've had him on the show, and how he, you know, addresses his team, the things he does to get him prepared and the way he thinks the game and watches the game. So I'm a little shocked. And excuse me, I've been at a coaching clinic with Troy. He's a thorough guy. He breaks down video well. He's real thorough in that regard. So I'm sure he'll resurface again, and it'll be good to talk to him tonight and see where his head's at. And but that's a tough one for me, knowing him now too. Mm-hmm.
It's we'll stand by to see who goes in there as head coach of the Kitchener Rangers. I know there was a lot of talk online about Steve's spot going back to his old position, but I cannot see that one happening. Meanwhile, in Charlottetown, the QMJHL, Gord Dwyer relieved of his duties in Charlottetown, which is another one where you sort of scratch your head. For the first time in 11 years, that franchise wins a round of the playoffs, lose their number one goaltender, and Mason McDonald, the second-round draft pick of the Calgary Flames, and Gord Dwyer ends up paying the price.
Well, again, and Gordy's a teammate of mine. I know him really well. I know the kind of...
The guy works hard.
He does.
Hard.
I know the kind of teammate he was. Yep. You know, he's a tough kid. He was a game kid. He showed up in shape. He had a great attitude. Every day was a great day for Gord Dwyer at the rink. And so And he's a guy, as you know, I've touched base with, you know, weekly to pick his brain about, you know, his team, the rest of the QMJHL and what's happening and his thoughts on players and everything. So he was one of my first references when I started this job in the fall. So I appreciate all he's done for me to this point. Mm-hmm. I don't see this one doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either. Jeffy, you know, they upset in the first round. As you said, they win a series. They do get swept in the second round. But we watched, you know, him on TV all year, handle his team and handle some pretty strong personalities on and off the ice.
Yep.
And I thought he did a great job. And so I know with this guy's work ethic and his attitude, what he brings to a team, that he'll resurface again real soon.
The name that I heard yesterday was John Torchetti.
Yeah, right.
Would that surprise you?
Well, a little bit. I played Torch, you know, funny.
You know everybody.
Yeah, it's not even fair. I played
everywhere,
folks.
Name. Oh, yeah, he was my teammate.
Torchetti was an assistant with Gordy Dwyer and I, actually, when I was with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so a little surprised at that move, but a friend of Grant Saunier, so there's a
connection there.
I'm not
sure if that happens.
Yeah, who knows?
It's just a name. Who knows?
Who knows? But a guy that loves the game, loves to coach, has been around it. And so for him to go back to junior there wouldn't shock me one bit. So we'll see.
Speaking of coaching, we'll end the podcast on this one. You've done some coaching at the junior C level.
Yes, I have.
And you and I always get together. We always have a little chat about the Schmaltz Cup, whether it's Essex or Port Hope. But what's your coaching experience like in junior C?
You know, I really liked it, and it was, you know, if you could talk to a dozen of my coaches, Jeffy, and they'd never think I'd be a very good coach, which is, let's get them on the phone right now. But, you know, I came back from my playing career, and one of my childhood friends, a guy I grew up with, Bob McNear, was coaching the junior C team, same age as me. He was a five-year junior player, a cop in the area, a friend of our families, and he said, would you be willing to come back and help me on the bench? And that was my first experience. I'd been to this coaching clinic with Troy Smith
Troy,
and Spotter, and so I did. And the first couple of years I was on the bench. After that, I would just, you know, really do practice and be the eye in the sky. But I enjoyed it. And in junior C, it can be difficult. It can be difficult because we're only allowed one 16-year-old. So it's not the development league I'd like to see it be. We have three 21-year-olds, if you can imagine. It should be, in my estimation, the other way around.
Right.
Because there's a lot of minor midgets.
Tough to get them to the rink sometimes?
Difficult. Can be, yes. There's a, you know, that's my point, is that the young guys normally are the ones that have the incentive to go on to a higher level of hockey. And then your older kids, you know, generally are a year from beer league.
Just to pull back the curtain a second, when Todd and I first started together, we were talking about junior C hockey. I said, Todd, what was the hardest thing about coaching junior C? He said, getting the guys to show up at the rink.
And the head coach, Bobby, who's an intense old school guy who would be on time and, you know, punch the clock.
Oh,
that
boy.
Used to drive him batty. And so I'd be the guy often, you know, mediating all those relationships. So, yeah, it was challenging, but I enjoyed it. And I'll always enjoy coaching.
Well, listen, on that, we'll wrap up. Thanks so much for stepping in for Sammy. We'll see you on set tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern. It is a Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds hosting the Erie Otters. Game 5 of that best of 7. Erie up 3-1. could close out tonight and then face off against the winner of the Oshawa North Bay Series. On behalf of Todd and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks so much for joining us today. Back next week with more Junior, your favorite CHL podcast. Have a great week.